Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That is true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life. I do a column there a couple times a week, two or three times a week, about that intersection between the lives we lead and the stories we tell, as do other writers. And we also have video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. My latest, just up this week, is with Reza Farazmand, the cartoonist, author of Poorly Drawn Lines, and he's got a new graphic novel out called City Monster. Fun guy. We talked about humor. We talked about his just writing and cartoons. Anyway, fascinating conversation. Lovely guy. Check it out at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. We have a little conference, a mini craft conference coming up in January. So no matter where you are, as is the nature right now, given the pandemic, this is going to be online. So anyone can attend. Again, we're not going to be pitching stories at this one. No agents or editors. We love them, but they're not coming to this one. I'm going to be doing a class on the book proposal. There'll be other classes on story and character. Anyway, you know what craft is. Well, if you want to attend, check it out at pnwa.org, pnwa.org. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. Okay, people. Oh, we got a good one for you today. Yes, we do. Mr. E.A. Bars. He is the author of The Unrepentant and, most recently, the thriller They're Gone. It's exciting. It's a good one. As well as the anthologies, The Swamp Killers and The Night of the Flood. And in both anthologies, he served as co-editor and contributor. His column, Decisions and Revisions, little T.S. Eliot reference there, appears monthly in the Washington Independent Review of Books. And he is also the managing editor of The Thrill Begins, international thriller writers online resource for aspiring and debut thriller writers. He also serves on the board of ITW as the vice president of author programs. In addition to ITW, he is a member of Mystery Writers of America, Crime Writers of Color, and Sin C. Bars also runs the Noir at the Bar series for Washington, D.C. He was born in Panama, but he lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and he's with us today on the telephone. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm already having fun, and we just started, so that's a good start.
Should we end now? Because I know you want to go. You know, you go out on a positive.
No, we're gonna get even. Oh. On a higher note, it's gonna get even higher. Okay, so you're born in Panama. When did you come to these United States?
So I was born in Panama and lived there for maybe my first 4 years or so, and then my dad was military and brought us to the States. So we went around everywhere. I spoke Spanish when I came here and learned English and promptly forgot my Spanish and never been able to quite get it back.
No! Oh, no! You know, it's funny. I have a friend. He's Korean. I mean, he's a Korean-American. I think he was born in America, but he's fluent in Korean. His parents were Korean. But his father was some big deal mathematician, and they lived in Paris when he was seven. And so for that, after he lived in Paris for 1 year, he's been fluent in French ever since. So I had the idea that all children are like that. Like once you get fluent in something, you just have it. But you lost it. You lost it.
I did. And it's really it's so frustrating because half my family, right, is in Panama. And all of my conversations with them are essentially, hi, I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine too. Good.
No.
You know, sometimes I throw in a formal usted, but that's about it, you know?
Wow. I was going to ask you about the language thing because writing language, you know, Nabokov, he wrote, I think Lolita was his first book in English. You know, he wrote all those in Russian. And so, but that wasn't an issue, apparently. Not at all. Okay.
Yeah. In so many ways, he and I are very similar. But that is one glaring difference.
You and Nabokov, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Putting that up. All right. Well, so you came here. Okay. So you're American. Psychologically, I assume that's sort of how you see yourself. I don't know. This is my only country, so I don't know how that works. Is that kind of how you see yourself?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I try to go to, I've lived around in and throughout America for most of my life, aside from like a stint in Europe. But, it's really, I do see myself as American, but the Panamanian has become more important the older I've gotten. And I have a son now. He's 6 years old. And I really want to make going to Panama something that's just part of his life, something that when he's older, he sees every couple of years we'd go to Panama. It will be fun for him. Right?
Good
it's
luck.
It's got to be a drag, but still.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Hoping for something for your children. I just having have two of them. You just never know what they're going to like. He may love it, and he may roll his eyes at it. You just don't know, do you?
I go into it with a very low bar. I'm expecting him to dislike everything.
Yeah.
So I'm pleasantly surprised a lot of the times,
All right. Excellent. All right. So let's talk about you. So let's talk about when you're a young person. When did you writers?
Thank you.
Writers are, there's kind of a common thread that runs through them, but there's all different – creation stories, so to speak. When did you get really interested in stories? Like, was that something you always loved?
Yeah, I mean, I was I'm an only child, and because we moved around a lot, it was I had friends wherever we went, but there was definitely a bit of an outsider, kind of sense to that, and isolation, and I spent a lot of time, with my folks, which was fine, but I also spent a lot of time in books. I remember, distinctly, like, walking with them when we were in Europe, and, following them and reading a book as I was walking. I always had a book with me.
Right. You're one of those.
Honestly, I think a lot of writers had that relationship with books. Growing up, but I didn't really take it seriously. I mean, it was kind of the thing where people said, I had that teacher who was like, you should write, and you have that. People see it in you, even when you don't really take it seriously. And it wasn't until college that I really began to think this is something I could do.
Yeah, it's interesting with writers because there's a few examples I know. Andre Debuse, and his dad was Andre Debuse, the writer. But most writers don't come from writers. You might be a lawyer who comes from lawyer or doctor. I mean, or I should say, it's just the arts period, because there's a lot of professions that there's some overlap, but the arts is very particular. And most people go into the arts don't come from people who were in the arts. Your father was in the military, so that's not the arts.
Right.
So psychologically, and so in college, you're going to college. Were you taking like a creative writing class or something? Like, what triggered the thought that you wanted to pursue it?
Well, I went into college as a psychology major, and after two years, I promptly and just with as much force as possible failed out, and I begged the college, again, very forcefully, to let me back in, because my parents were going to kill me, and and the college said, you can come back, but you have to take certain classes to improve your setting, you have to maintain a certain GPA, otherwise you're gone for good. You absolutely cannot be a psychology major. You have to switch majors. I was like, all right, well, I'll go into English because it just seemed kind of natural to me. And it was, I thought it'd be easy. And it was. Right. There was no math. There really weren't any tests. And English professors are the kings and queens of, if you try hard, that's good enough.
Right.
But, doing that, I started to take advanced courses, and I had really good professors at the school I went to, George Mason University. And one of them was Alan Chuse, who was on NPR for years as the book critic for All Things Considered.
Wow.
And he was he taught at Mason, and he was a really brutally tough teacher. But
how so?
Incredibly effective. Oh, he just, we were in an advanced fiction writing course, and there was maybe 20 of us, and after the first class, there was 12 left because 8 kids dropped out. And he said this. Yeah, he said this is going to be boot camp for writers, and he had us bring in something that we'd written, and he read it, and you know, he took one student's paper and he started reading it, and then he got to the second page, and he said, "This is where the story starts," and he ripped out the first page and threw it away, and that kind of thing is, you know, it's a bit much, right?
Yeah,
but
And
I don't necessarily agree with it as a teaching method. And there was other things he did. Nothing that was, you know, he wasn't Bobby Knight or anything, but it was still, it was still really, yeah, he wasn't wrong.
Right.
And we began to see that. And honestly, at some point earning respect from him, earning praise from him was so, such a lofty reward.
It was kind of a paper chase situation a little bit, maybe. Remember that movie? Did you ever see the movie?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's older than you. I think I'm a little older than you are. But, it's at Harvard, and this professor, you just want his approval.
Yeah, you know, and it was sort of like that. But he was also there was also a very definite enthusiasm for literature. You know, he was very much married to the classics and sort of the approach. And that was at the time, you know, I hadn't read anything that would be considered serious literature. And
what did you read when you were a kid? What were you reading when you were a kid?
Yeah, I read really violent books. I read, my parents had a very open policy with reading and music and entertainment. They assumed that if I read, you know, if I listened to music they didn't like, it would lead to music that they did like. And generally that kind of happened. But when I was a kid, I was really into, I don't know if people still know this, but Mac Bolan.
Not familiar.
Yeah, it was he was kind of the predecessor to Jack Reacher.
Ah, okay.
Just a lot more violent.
Action.
And these books. Yeah, these books came out like monthly, and they were written by a team of writers under the name Don Pendleton.
I see. Okay. Right.
And they were subscription. You would subscribe and get these books, you know, a little box of books, and I loved them. I thought they were so fun, and and my parents were a little concerned. But eventually,
it was like romance
kind of
fiction for young dudes.
Yeah, and it kind of led to you know, an interest in, you know, as I got a little older, I started reading David Morrell, and I really loved his stuff. When I was in high school, I think in college, and from then on, it went to, you know, sort of very contemporary thriller writers.
Right. Well, it's tough if you're reading that stuff, because I remember and then you're taking a class from a guy who's steeped in the classics, and there's a certain approach. It's you're going to grate on his aesthetic. I don't know if he was able to. I don't want to spend all 30 minutes talking about this guy, but it's always an interesting thing because the conflict between literary fiction. So you're talking literary fiction and genre fiction. It doesn't need to be there, but sometimes it is, especially between teachers and students. When the teacher really is trying to teach literary fiction, and they may only have three literary writers in their class, and the rest want to write genre, and there can be this conflict over aesthetic. Because the aesthetic for the literary fiction is one thing, and sometimes it's very different for the genre writer. So did you go through that at all?
I did, but there was also the sense that, you know, we really didn't know better, right? We were very
right.
If I was doing something like that now, I could, you know, make arguments in favor of different genres. At that point, really didn't know anything about writing, and he used the classics to teach us the basics.
Right. Okay.
I thought that approach was fine. At this point nowadays, when I look at writers, I don't really differentiate between literary and genre anymore. You know,
I understand that, but there are people who in their minds draw a clear distinction. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I think there's less of a difference myself, but there are people who get very much up on the horse from both sides about like, no, there's a big difference and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure you've met some of them.
I have. You know, what's really interesting to me about this, and I've been thinking about it a lot, and I'm planning to write something about it at some point, but I've only traditionally published, and that's okay. Probably the only route I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I have nothing against self-publishing, but it seems to me that if there's any sort of snobbishness or any kind of barriers that are erected now, they're probably really not between literary and genre writers as much as they are between traditionally published and self-published writers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because the barriers, there's one thing for taste, but genre writers are, you know, I mean, they're the ones who are selling books, the ones who are, you know, having, you know, more success in the marketplace compared to strictly say literary writer.
Yes, true.
But self-published writers don't even have that access, you know, to conferences, to reviews, to stores, to
It's tough. And the no filtration system. I mean, I know for this show, I get requests for people who self-published, and I generally don't do it because for a lot of reasons. And I might be inundated, but I prefer the traditional. But I do think people are self-publishing, some of them because it really suits their personality. It truly suits their personality. I know people who are having success doing it. But I think a lot of people, they're afraid of the rejection process. And to all you self-published people out there,
too.
I'm not saying that's who you are, but I do think there's a lot of people who, and I can understand that. It's so uncomfortable, but I think it's one way around it. But I think it can be disappointing. So did you know?
I completely agree with that, 100%. And the rejection process is that I've met a lot of people like that. The rejection process is so painful, but also so instrumental.
Yeah,
you know, you shouldn't be in this field if you're not willing to go through it and honestly go through the ends. You know, that we're talking about college and writing, and the big difference for me that it happened when I after college from writing was in college, if you worked hard, you would see the reward.
Right.
There's no guarantee of that in writing.
No.
Nobody owes you anything.
No,
you can work for years on a book and consider it a masterpiece, and it could end up in your drive or your drawer forever.
Yep, absolutely. And I have many of those books myself that I worked.
I've got
the
one.
The first book I wrote,
two.
I spent 5 years writing it, and that thing just never saw the light of day, baby.
Same here.
Well, you know,
same here.
You know, but that's like your, you know, you went to college for it. Okay. But wasn't that first book where you really learned it? I mean, isn't that where that was your real, whether you got an MFA or not, that is where your real advanced degree happened.
That is so astute. And I can't believe I used the word astute, but here we are. You know, you're exactly right. That book. Writing that book taught me so much about writing. That's not to take away from the schooling. It's not to take away from the voracious reading I was doing.
Yeah.
But the writing of that first book with honestly no idea what I was doing. And so no constraints, no rules. It was just the pleasure of writing. And there was no publishing knowledge. It was one of the best times I've ever had as a writer. And I'll never get that again. But it was, but the book was, you know, was not very good.
right. Well, it's tricky, isn't it? Because you have to learn. I always think of it like, I mean, some people are able to get it right away. But when you're writing a book, a novel, I assume this was a novel, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You begin to discover like I can't, like if you're writing a short story or a poem or an essay even, which I do a lot of short form stuff, you can kind of hold the thing in your head. You know, you have a sense of the whole thing in your mind, especially after you, but with a novel, you can't do that. Like it's beyond your mind in a way. And you have to so trust in something that you can't see that I think that takes getting used to. Just the amount, it's beyond your intellectual ability to see that from beginning to end.
It really is. And it's very hard, I find. And other writers seem to do this pretty well, but I wrote something today where I was talking about it because I write a lot of nonfiction as well as fiction.
Uh-huh.
And I think with my nonfiction, I can tell you years later what led to an essay, why I wrote something. With fiction, I can't tell you an hour later why I'm writing this.
Yeah.
Even if I love writing it, I don't know what spurred it on. You know, I really don't, and I don't know if it's like some kind of, you know, I don't want to, you know, be pretentious and say that's the magical muse or something. But
it's,
whatever it is, it's not pretentious.
It's not pretentious. It's the reality. It's the reality. You're sitting down there. Like, listen, I don't, like, do you know who? I'm forgetting his name now. God, the great crime writer. Well, his name escapes me right now. But when you're sitting down there, you have to admit you're basically in a relationship with something, whatever you want to name it, your imagination, God, muse, something, because things come to you. You don't go get them, right? I mean, you can't, you have to let it come to you. And if it's coming to you, then you can use whatever language you want, but that's the reality of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You know, it's one thing with fiction that I really wrestle with, because with that, I was thinking about this for a while, like nonfiction to me feels like a very easy mathematical formula. You know, I'm writing within certain parameters and boundaries,
right?
And there's a start to an end. With fiction, I'm creating all of those boundaries, and it never quite feels as done to me as nonfiction.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I never entirely feel finished.
You know, I think that is, I have a theory about that. In part, which is, I've often felt with when we write, we start a story and the reader finishes it. And in fiction, that is really true, because so much of what you have to do as a fiction writer is you're leaving out the stuff you know the reader has to fill in. Like, you can't
–
you choose those few details. And so much of it is finished by the reader. And I think they're the ones that finish it. We don't get that feeling, but they do. What do you think of that?
Yeah.
That's my theory.
Yeah, I think I don't – disagree with that at all. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you it's always interesting to me to take a look to talk to somebody when they have a completely different perspective of something I've written.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, oh, I didn't realize you were going in that direction, or the reader was going that direction. And I kind of remember a line from Laurie Moore where she was saying, you know, writers have no understanding at all of what they've written.
Yes.
And I, you know,
so
I think there's some, yeah, you know, I feel there's definitely some truth to that. But I also feel that for me, and I know I'm harder on myself, on my writing, than anyone else can be.
Sure.
You know, I mean, fortunately, I haven't had a review that's harder on my writing than I
right.
am.
Right. Well, good,
really
good.
Devastating.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so I don't know. I'm going to look back at something I wrote a year or two ago, and I don't know. I do that sometimes if I'm at an event and I read something that I wrote a while back. Sometimes you can be pleasantly surprised, but for me, it's a pleasant surprise. I'm never really that cocksure about something I wrote years ago.
Right,
and I guess you shouldn't be, right? Because you're improving. I mean,
you should, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. That's the plan. Well then, so this is your book. This is your second novel that you've published. They're Gone. Yeah.
It's actually my fourth.
Okay.
The first
your
two
fourth?
Are. Yeah. And that happens all the time, because the first two are out of print. With a really, really small publisher, and we ended up getting the rights back because they were just sort of gathering dust.
Yeah. Okay. And so this is your fourth. Can you recognize something in you that grew in writing this, something that you felt you came to understand about writing that you maybe didn't understand with the first three?
Yeah, I think with this book, and it's something that I realized maybe in the just after I'd finished it, was tension, you know,
and
the use of suspense. But one thing with that is that I don't consider myself very, you know, I think every writer has their strengths, and it's good to know your strengths. You know, some people are great at dialogue. Some people are really good at metaphor. For me, I don't consider a strength of mine to be plot. Which is why when I write crime fiction, and if I'm talking about it with people and they ask about writing mysteries, I'm like, I do not write mysteries. I write thrillers.
Right. Right. Because
a mystery is way too intricate for me to even follow, much less devise. But with this book, when the reviews came in, they were positive, which was wonderful, but they all complimented the plot. And I was like, why are you complimenting the plot?
Nice.
I think I'm not very good at this.
Now,
part of it was because I sort of cheat. it's not really cheating, but it kind of feels like cheating to me because I write from I have co-protagonists,
right.
And I have to bring their tales together, and you know their
right.
stories have to start weaving together. So that's where the plot gets complicated. I feel like for me, I'm telling just two different stories, and they're in the same book, and in a way that just doesn't feel like a very complex plot. But to readers, it's what we were saying earlier, to readers and I guess reviewers, they see it differently. They're like, oh, you
right.
took
well,
these two disparate
yeah.
women.
Yeah, so you took these two
and
things and you
together.
Brought them together. Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a trick you pulled off, kind of like a
right?
genius move. But you thought it
yeah,
was easy.
Yeah, and for me, it was really just sort of a cheat. You know, because I find plotting to be, especially, you know, with solidly in crime fiction. So most of the people I know write mysteries. And
right.
I think that would just be such a, you know, the process would be so
maybe.
laborious.
Maybe. See, hey, listen, I know mystery writers. I've known mystery writers. I won't name them, but they said the way it works is they were women who did it this way. The ones that I can think of. They said,
yeah.
Well, I have a body at the beginning of the book. I don't know who killed it, but I put the body there and I find out by the time I'm done writing it. So they don't even know. And they're writing mysteries. So there's all different ways to do that.
I would feel so frazzled doing that.
I thought it was the butler. No, it's the maid or whatever. Hey, you know, you got to give yourself more credit. My son playing a lot of chess these days. Started playing. He beat some guy the other night. He loses a lot, but he won. So he came out and said, I won. That guy must be the worst chess player in the world. I said, Stop it.
Yeah,
You're taking away from your victory. Give it to yourself. Maybe you got better. So maybe you're finding your own way to plot. Maybe that's what you got to find, Ed, is your way to plot.
I think so. And I think, you know, there's that kind of tired, you know, conversation that always happens at writing conferences. Are you a plotter or a pantser?
Oh,
yeah. Right. But I do tend to find that for me, I need to have a very, most of my life has to follow that route. You know, I have to be very formulaic and I need to have a process laid out. I don't like deviation. So having a kid does not help with that, by the way.
No.
We need certainty.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So with my writing, I can control that, you know, and in my life, but I'm very much the same way in my life. Like if things aren't going according to plan, I mean, 2020 has not been easy.
No, it wasn't part of it wasn't part of your plan.
This was not, I did not see this coming in 2019.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yes, it's been interesting. We've all been learning. I mean, for a lot of the writers, it's funny. I talked to this writer last week, Joan Frank, and she was like, I thought I was an introvert. I thought I didn't want to be around people. I do. I am not as much of an introvert as I thought now that I can't see anybody. And I don't know if you've – well, of course, you have a family, so it's a little different. So you're probably a little more crowded down there in your house.
It's not – too bad. I mean, you know, honestly, I'm a homebody, and there's a lot of awful things about the pandemic, obviously, but staying at home and sort of being housebound and my day job, putting me remote, you know, that actually has really been pleasant. I've liked that a lot. And I'm an extrovert. I like to be around people.
Oh.
I really love the in-person events.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I could get used to this.
Yeah.
Not a global pandemic.
But I think people, I do think there's this, you know, I do think we have learned something. And I think some of what we have learned from this, certainly for like writers' conferences, they've learned the virtual thing is okay. And there's been some great invention from all that. And I hope some people out there have learned to be quieter and learn to find something that writers have to find within themselves to be entertained all the time. I hope some people who are used to looking for bars and restaurants for that can maybe find something within themselves to connect to that they thought they had to get from the out of doors. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think this has forced a bit of introspection and a bit of self-analysis for everybody. Right?
Yeah.
And we've all been put in a situation. You know, I've got to tell you, you know, in March when this first really happened and we were so uncertain and frightened. I was as frightened as anybody, but there was this warmth to the shared experience.
For me, I
remember doing the very first, you know, I do a lot of virtual, I host DC's Noir at the Bar series, and we went virtually.
Yep.
And the first event, I didn't do the first. The first one that I saw was a New York one done by a great writer, Alex Segura. And had maybe 300 to 400 people on.
Wow.
And there was such joy in seeing everybody's faces on Zoom. And it was, you know, we have Zoom fatigue now. But that sense of connection and that need for it, that hunger for it, I don't know if we'll ever get that again, but it was kind of like, you know, it was like 9/12, as bad as 9/11 was.
Yeah.
There was that 9/12 sense of love and an understanding.
That's right. That's right. Oh, what a good note to end on. Actually, I'm not quite done with you. EA, Ed, one more question for you. Well, first of all, people want to learn about you. And I know that EA Bars is a I don't know if you're going to be writing under that name still, but I know you also write under, I don't know, do you want to talk about your other name?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, my name is my real name is Ed Amar. I do most of my writing under EA Amar. I do that only because I don't really like how Ed Amar looks in print. There's no really reason.
Right. Okay.
That.
So it's nothing that complicated. All right. So if they want to learn about EA Bars, which is Barres, for those of you just listening, Barres, where's the best place to go?
The best place, I mean, I'm on all the social media channels under EA Amar, AYMAR. The easiest place to find everything, like what events I have coming up or writing, would be my website, eamar.com.
Gotcha. eamar.com. Okay, so my last question for you, Ed, is this. Finish this sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
I'm going to go with a little bit of a different answer. The importance of location.
Interesting. Location in the book or your physical location?
The importance of writing about location.
Oh.
You know, and understanding where you're from and where you are.
Interesting.
I think, you know, I think I became a stronger writer once I realized the importance of writing about what's around me, and not just, you know, the people, but the city and the land and what it means and how the people from it develop and grow versus where they grow everywhere else.
Right.
And I find that I think it was, you know, Flannery O'Connor who said the best American writing is regional writing. And I think that's still true. I think we still, when I teach creative writing classes now, or when I judge short stories for contests or something, there's always those writers who turn away from location and they just want to talk about maybe two people and they think they're focusing on personalities and character and they're missing that character is so informed by location.
Interesting.
And that characters and, you know, a murder investigation, you know, I do crime fiction, in Hawaii is different than it is in Baltimore or Tennessee. And those differences inform your character and they inform the reader and they inform you as a person.
Fascinating. Well, I've asked that question many times, Ed, and that is the first answer. That is the first time I've heard it answered that way. Interesting.
Good
for you.
Good.
You broke out of the
Thank
box.
You.
Well done.
Awesome.
All right. Well, listen, Ed, this has been a lot of fun, as I thought it would be, and I wish you the best of luck with They're Gone and whatever the next project is.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. You're right. We ended on a higher note than we started, which is
You
which
see?
Is great.
It can be done. Gotta believe. Okay, Ed, take it easy.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, location, location, location. It's good. It's true. Put your people somewhere. Not a moonscape. Gotta be somewhere. We're always interacting with our environment. Okay. Well, this was a lot of fun. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, as always. And I'll be back again next week. We'll do this again. Till then, people, go find something you love to do and do it.